Hey.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm hanging in here. How about yourself?
Doing well. I can't complain. A little allergy thing going on right now, but we're all good.
I hear that.
Hurricane Dorian stirred up all the pollen down here.
Right? I'm telling you, and that's not the only Dorian in history to stir some mess. Team Paris is burning, so you know.
Dodge. So, of course, let me go ahead and introduce us. For first-time listeners, this is Katina La Rosa, and I'm here with my guest, Johnny.
Yes.
Johnny Evangelista, who mm-hmm. runs the house. Yes, our HOE house. If you haven't
That's
had
right.
a chance to check us out on Facebook, please do. House of Evangelista. It's great. I mean, I feel like it is a revolution to tell
well, thank you. Oh, thank you. Thank you. And to clarify, so mother of the House of Evangelista Facebook page, because, you know, like I can't pair up to Blanca. She is the mother of all mothers. So
yeah.
And Electra, of course, but so yeah, I kind of just started the page, you know, on a whim and just on faith, and you know, it's become quite large, and we've got a lot going on and a lot coming up and crazy stuff in motion. So lots to come. Yeah, so please check us out, and thank you.
No problem. So basically, of course, you know, this is uncommitted comedy. We're oh so uncommitted that we don't even know if we'll be on next week. And or we don't know if we'll be committed. Either one. I mean, how
either,
do you
either or.
So definitely. And I'm in sunny Orlando. Mm-hmm. And I know that's you've been down here, you've visited.
Yes,
we'll be
yeah.
able to link up. And tell the listeners where you're from.
So I'm coming to you from New Jersey. I live near the shore, so near Point Pleasant Beach, and you know, by the beach. So we have that in common. I mean, we get, you know, I know you're not too far from the beach.
Right. Yeah, I'm not too far. Probably depends on how you drive or what side of the beach you want to be on.
Because you know, Florida driving is a different experience.
It is.
From, let's say, the tri-state area. We're aggressive here, mm-hmm. but we have laws through the roof. And, you know, Florida's a little more willy-nilly, and I love driving in Florida. It's so much fun.
You can do what you want to do. On the sidewalk, it doesn't matter.
You can U-turn in the middle of the street. U-turn off the highway.
Yes. You can get over midsection underneath the light. Now, in Alabama, you're not supposed to do that, but you know,
oh my goodness,
here people do it all the time. I mean,
it's fair game. It's fair game.
So with that, I feel it's good to give our medical disclaimer, of course.
Yes.
So the content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician, health providers, with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. So there we go. I think I covered it.
You covered it.
Just wanted
you got
to,
it.
Wanted to... Once again, please cover everything.
Yes.
So
yes.
Basically, I wanted to talk about our show, Pose, and not only the show, the movement. And I wanted to do a special edition for the parents.
Love it.
I love the parents because I feel like they are the foundation of the house. They basically are building a legacy, more or less. And your children reflect upon your parenting. That's a lot of times, you know, it's not always for the bad. It's not always for the good,
mm-hmm.
but it is, you know, it all begins with home and the home church. So I love what they've done with showing the importance of family and building that family unit.
Really. And people who, you know, are marginalized and don't have access to their biological families because for whatever reason, their biological families aren't able to be good family to them. And yeah, this is about grassroots finding your chosen family and coming up through the ball system, right? And the competition and the era of family and love and support. So it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. So I want you to explain like core beliefs because I feel like that's an excellent topic.
Okay. So this is, and I am a huge advocate for people to think about our core beliefs and understand our core beliefs. So, you know, Katina, as we've talked about in the past, I'm a cognitive behavioral therapist. So the essence of cognitive behavioral therapy is the idea that events lead to thoughts and feelings, and those thoughts and feelings, it turn into actions and behaviors. They manifest. And core beliefs, excuse me, are essentially a set of beliefs that at some point in our life we have kind of grounded and agreed to. And it's it can run the gamut. It can be things like, I'm not worthy, I am worthy, I'm lovable, I'm unlovable, I'm not good enough, I am good enough. So core beliefs can run in terms of positive and negative. And they tend to affect us from the core outward. So when we say core, deeply ingrained, always there, generally part of most decisions we make. And then when we go back to cognitive behavioral, right? Cognitive being understanding or learning how we learn our behavior. Those core beliefs will be set pretty firmly. I mean, very firmly in what then manifests into how we respond to events, how we respond to our thoughts and feelings. So that's really the gist of the core belief. And core beliefs are very often identified when we're very young. And we set these beliefs with often a child's brain, which is not fully developed. So we're dealing with, you know, let's say a 3 or 4 year old making a choice or an observation, a belief about life that they are then going to hold on to maybe for the rest of their lives. And it's based on the choice made by a child. So, you know, I wouldn't have chosen the same car to purchase at my age as I would have maybe at 3 years old if I saw a car. So it's just, you know, it speaks to the difference in brain growth.
Yes. So there's a lot of development with the core beliefs. It's not like you're necessarily stuck, it feels like, but it does have an overwhelming, I don't know how to say it, like impulse control or...
Sure, yeah, you could say absolutely, right? Because, right, when we talk about impulse, we talk about actions or behaviors that come without much thought. So impulse control, right? If we're acting on impulse, we're doing things on spur of the moment. Sometimes it's based on gut instincts. Sometimes it's based on, who knows, the environment, you know, fear. A ton of things it could be based on. So, I think you could definitely relate impulsivity to core beliefs because they can come up very quickly and they kind of always linger. So,
And so I feel like this is a great, I want to talk about the foundation. So how else better to talk about the foundation of POSE and the housing system other than Dominique Jackson's character,
Electra Wintour. Yeah, because Wintour came, it was coming, it showed up. They arrived.
She let it snow.
She blew through like a blizzard, that one. But yeah, and that's a really interesting situation because, you know, for those of us that have watched Pose, we know that Electra, who is a house mother, right? Who has started her own house. She's been now the mother of several houses or participant in several houses. Mother of at least two, right? We have, she was House of Abundance and then House of Wintour. So yeah, so she is sort of the perfect character to look at in terms of what are her core beliefs? Because those core beliefs often can trickle down to, you know, those that we influence. So her quote unquote children, right? They're her chosen family.
Right, right. Because when she started the house, the former House of Abundance, it was Bianca, Angel, Candy, and Lulu.
Correct.
And
Lamar Cubby, and, I think.
Right? Oh, Cubby. I think Cubby, it felt like Cubby came in the second. Yeah. But you might be right. I think you might be right.
I don't know.
Wait a minute. I think you might be right on that one. Hold on, first season. I'm like trying to do a rewind tape quick. You know,
and the first episode when they showed, you know, though he was, hold up, when they went into the museum to get the costumes for Cubby was with them.
You're right. He sure was.
Cubby, Lamar, Lulu, Candy, Blanca, Angel, and of course Mother, escort Mother to her throne.
Yes, thank you. And I think I was thinking of the four because I remember a scene at the end where, you know, Bianca was breaking off.
Yes.
And then these were the four that, you know, kind of, well, Angel was, she's pretty much lined up to be the second mother from the way Bianca is planning. Well, I don't want to give too much, too much away. But yeah. So I think that's what I was thinking in my head from that stint.
Yeah.
But you're right. Cubby's there. Yeah. Cubby's there.
Yeah, he was. That's right. I'm not right often, so that's what my husband will say. I'm not right very often, so.
Well, you're right on this one.
Thank you.
And I was like, wait a minute. I was thinking, and I was like,
hold up.
Let me rewind.
He was there. Yeah. He was popping those royalty outfits from the museum. That's correct.
That's right. He went down with the rest of the crowd.
Yes, he did.
Thanks, Cubby.
Thank you. Shout out to Cubby.
So with Mother Wintour, one of the core, what you talked about with the core beliefs, I thought of entitlement with her.
Oh.
And that's not always a bad thing. I mean, I know a lot of people can think of it as negatively. But to expect the best, you know, if you're going to be here.
It's true. Right. So, you know, I mean, and entitlement is one of those core beliefs that, you know, I don't want to say, you know, if we look at Elektra, I don't want to say that she is probably innately entitled. She is probably more so developmental in terms of she's developed her entitlement. Through her experiences, through her, you know, what she's been through, the struggles, you know, that entitlement has come with many things. Right. So not so much just, let's say, that she grew up as a wealthy, entitled child. You know, it's nothing to that effect. I think it's more so the entitlement probably comes very much with I would say everything, despite the fact that, she, you know, the actress Dominique Jackson is a very tall, statuesque woman. So I think the height is maybe that one thing that you know, could be maybe when people think in terms of gender and what male versus female. You know, we tend to think male taller, right? Larger. But, you know, otherwise, very, very effeminate, beautiful, female presenting femme. So there's, I think, entitlement that comes with that because, you know, I know people who are of trans experience and, you know, we use the word, I'm hesitant to use the word passing, but, you know, there is the essence of people who meet what we historically look at as male versus female look. Or characteristic or trait. And, you know, some of us, you know, for myself, for example,
I am a tall, broad-built man. It would be very difficult, I think, from if I, let's say I were a person of trans experience, to navigate through life and feel safe, because I would be more on the radar, more detectable, you know, based on what society looks at as male versus female. So that maybe there's some entitlement, Katina, that comes with that, you know, her being so, what we look at is so beautiful, you know, and so effeminate.
So with that, that's what made me think of, you know, Dominique as the entitled, you know, just the way she walked into a room and demanded attention. Yes. And respect, not only just attention, it's respect.
And shifts that energy. Any scene that she walks into, and I wonder, you know, even as a, just a real person, you know, in real life as an actress and an advocate and everything that she's done and a person of trans experience, you know, does she walk in the room and shift the energy like Elektra does?
No. Oh, yeah.
I bet she does. I bet she has that that presence about her. And Elektra can sometimes be more of a negative or heavy, you know, entitled presence. Like, I'm walking in and taking all the feels away from you because this is my room now. You know, to say that Dominique Jackson would like that. Because I've never met her in person, but I have some lifelong friends who have known her and have had her as house mothers, and they absolutely adore her and say the most lovely things as a person. So very much differs from her character, I'm told.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I totally feel that from just the way that she interviews, like from, you know, my research on YouTube and so forth.
Yeah.
It's the way she carries herself. She's naturally nurturing.
Yes. And has that air of that confidence, which I'm sure has come over time. Cause we've seen those interviews where she's talked about growing up. I believe she's from Haiti. Is she from Haiti? She's Haitian. Is she? And
no, she's
Trinidad. Correct. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And she talked about just, I don't know, the acceptance and moving and, you know, coming to the States and
having to leave, having to leave Trinidad because, you know, she, voicing that she would not have survived there. So, you know, coming from, even for, you know, we talk about these core beliefs, right? We see the interviews with Dominique Jackson, and she is so eloquent and just so lovely and has that type of personality that you're drawn to because you feel instant comfort with certain personalities. And she seems to have that from what I've heard and from what I've seen. You know, obviously not speaking as people who know her personally,
right?
But from, you know, what we kind of see in the media and hear from people that do know her. So, you know, her not entitlement, but her core beliefs have probably altered quite a bit from a time, you know, as a younger trans person who maybe had not aligned their body when they were younger living in Trinidad with the person that they truly are inside, and living that life. And then now being, you know, this beautiful trans butterfly who is just a gorgeous human being. And, you know, I'm sure her sense of her core beliefs have shifted significantly, I would imagine, from a psychological standpoint.
You know, right.
I mean, to be a survivor in that sense, to leave your own country and your home, to live on the streets and to, you know, I know she's talked about history of, you know, substance abuse and sex work and things of that sort. And, you know, to really be like that person who can do that to survive and is not ashamed of it now, because look at what that did for her and where it brought her, you know?
No, it takes it to a whole nother level. So I really appreciate what she has brought to the role and how she's developed as well. Because remember when she had that, even though she's an entitled person, and she, or her Correct. Character,
Electra.
And
let's we're clarify. Talking about Electra.
Electra Wintour.
I always want to say abundance. Wintour.
Abundance. Sure. Yeah, well, we can talk. I think we should talk about abundance as being entitled. Yes,
that.
And then Wintour has simmered down a little bit because when she went through her hardships and she had to rely upon her children for that brief stint. It wasn't long.
Right.
And she snapped it together. She does what a mother does.
Yes.
She did what she had to do. And she pulled it together for her children. And for she knew that she had an ongoing legacy. It wasn't all just the kids that were passing through. She knew that there were other kids that needed her help.
Right, right.
And she snapped it together and she was like, okay, abundance is done. We are Wintour. Right. Wintour is coming.
Yeah, yeah. She had her little stints in between and, you know, between Evangelista and then Ferocity. And then it was like, okay, Ferocity's not working. I'm about to do the new, what is that called? Her, what's the word I'm thinking of? Not her,
Evolution? Her new.
Not, I was going to say, not her exclusive movie. You know when she snatches that tablecloth in the House of Ferocity? Yeah.
It spills all the slim fags.
The slim fags
had a fight.
And the popcorn and sriracha. I can't. I'm about to go on that diet if it makes you look that good.
Listen, it does. Listen, I ain't even going to lie to you. There was a time in life where I was on popcorn and prunes.
Oh, okay.
And let me tell you, your figure is snatched. Oh. It was coffee. It was free coffee at work. Dollar store popcorn and prunes.
Oh, listen, that's the diet of champions.
Waistline snatched. Perfect. I might have to return.
A little bit of being emaciated, a little bit of malnourished, but you know what? You look good.
Right. And that hunger look in your
eyes. Oh, yes, she's thirsty. Oh my goodness.
But yeah, so I felt that scene when she snatched, and I was like, "Ooh, the milkshakes look so delicious!" And it was like this slim fast.
And then she knocked them over. Yeah. But that was really, and that was such right. And so even if we go back to this evolution of the character of Electra, right, and her core belief was still there. You know, at that point, she said, "You know what?" She said, "I got weak, and I forgot who I am." And whether we can view the weakness as positive or negative, she was definitely emotionally beaten down and scarred, and especially after you know her gender surgery, the reassignment, and the relationship with I think his name was Dick, who had how that all kind of panned out. So she kind of refound. She did some digging and all of a sudden realized, like, wait a second, it's still down there. I'm still Electra. You know, none of you can do anything to take that from me. And she realized at that point, I will no longer allow anybody to take that from me. And she came back as House of Wintour. And that scene where they were playing Bad Girl by Donna Summer and she's going around and she's collecting her new house members and handing them the little Cartier boxes of, you know, come with me and I will be by your side and we'll take it to the top. And it was just like, here she is. She is resurfaced. She has rearrived. And you could feel, you know, the core beliefs are strong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's her love language too. I feel like that was a peek into her love language, gifts.
Yeah.
You know,
interesting.
That's how she shows it.
Right. Right. Which in itself is a completely different type of, this is stuff I talk with kids I work with all the time about, you know, parents who aren't able to provide on an emotional level, but they, because for some reason they cannot, and that may be related to the parents' core beliefs, I don't know, but, you know, they may try to mask that with physical things and gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Loved it. Yeah, but we could go on about Mother Wintour
correct
forever. But I wanted to also take this as an opportunity to tie in the role of the father figure.
Yeah.
And for me, that's Pray Tell.
Absolutely.
Pray Tell is it.
Yeah.
I love that character, Billy Porter.
Oh my gosh. And
was brought to life.
Yes, he's phenomenal. And the way he portrays Pray Tell's story, and it's done so wholeheartedly. And, you know, let's get into the core beliefs here, because this is a big one. Pray Tell is someone who has been through more than most people, you know, have been through. And let's say he's in his 40s, right? So then many mm-hmm. people have been through in their lifetime, especially in terms of people who view the show, because it spans, you know, all ethnicities, all cultures, all, you know, gender, sexual orientation. So his character, father figure of the house. We talk about core beliefs. What do you have? What are some of your thoughts, Katina, on that? Where are you?
On him, I feel like validation of affection, like abandonment. Like I feel like he's gone through abandonment and just finding that security with people and being able to trust again, because he's had his trust valid, you know, just
It's been shattered, you know.
It's just been shattered. Like his character gets me a little emotional, but and it's just because he's able to put on this face of strength and go about his life like he's never been broken.
Yeah, yeah. It very much what a parent often tries to do, even in a biological family, right? Parents mm-hmm. often say, I don't want my kids to see me crack. I don't want them to see me cry. I'm their strength. I'm their rock. And that's what he does for the community in Pose. You know, he really is not just for like a particular house, but I mean, he is, I think it was one of the first episodes when he was explaining that he was, you know, the father to all of these children, and he's walking along the pier in New York City. But this man has been through a lot. You know, a lot has come to light with Pray Tell's history. You know, mm-hmm. we learned of being raised by his bio mother, but a stepfather who then, it sounds as though was, you know, grooming him and then mm-hmm. abusing him. And then they, you know, abusers use that grooming to make the child think that it's not abuse, it's love. Right. Mm-hmm. So we have this layer of it. You know, the relationship with stepfather that sounded to be very volatile. Who knows what that meant with mom? Then he ends up at some point realizing who he truly is. He comes out. He's in New York City. He mm-hmm. Is there at a time when HIV was not known prior to what we see on TV. And he mm-hmm. contracts it, you know? And so now it's a whole other level of seeing people around you die and learning about your status. Relationships, people very often could walk away from, you know, at that point from fear of exposure. So abandonment, mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, down the line, absolutely, Katina.
Birth father, you know, I feel yes. like rejection.
Yes.
Abandonment.
Yeah.
And he's just... Everywhere he's turned, it feels like losing people, like with his lover.
Yes, that's right. Who we realize in season two had passed. Oh, well, there was Costas, right? Yes, there Costas, was that loss. And then after Costas, the bartender, I don't remember his name, from the ball, who then kind of Blanca hooked them up and they went out and... then we find out in season two, spoiler alert, that obviously that man had HIV, which then, you know, turned into AIDS and he passed. And yeah, just and like he mentioned in the show, just at one point in tears, I think Pray Tell's character is saying, I can't even tell you how many funerals I've been to, how many people I've lost, young people. You know, season two was I just felt like season two was packed with you know, the existence of loss, and it really focused on that. But maybe not as fabulous as season one in terms of glitter and ballroom and trophies, snatching trophies and stuff, but very much the reality, you know. So.
Right. But I feel like his abandonment, I guess, or issues with abandonment, there's no other way to say it, has made him a better character or person in this format, because he's so loyal.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. He, you know, from losing so many people, does that translate into, well, now that I can choose my family and choose the people I give my heart to, now I can put into this what I need to put into it because I'm making that choice. They won't take that from me, right? It's like a total mm-hmm. power shift in that dynamic. So yeah, he has grown into this phenomenal human being as a character, and is just taking care of the community. Amazing.
Yeah, I'm like, I just love, mm-hmm. I love the character. I love the father figure role and how, you know, it developed, because he was, okay, I'm an MC, you know, I rock, I control this. This is my little environment. And then it's like people come to him. They started coming to him for advice. They need it. And then it shows like the importance of, you know, that father figure male energy, but it also shows his vulnerability, because remember when he decided to put the mic down,
uh-huh,
let someone judge him, come judge for
yes
me.
And let judge for me, mother.
Yeah. And he became a butch queen, and I loved it, you know, because it shows that he had, like, you know, a feminine side,
yeah.
And or finding a feminine side, and it was a nice change.
Yeah,
you know,
because he was, and let me tell you, that Diana Ross look he was serving. Oh my God, he walked out, and that wig is bouncing, and he is. I'm like, oh my God, he has arrived. Patel is here. But Katina, who would have thought? Yeah. Right, so. And jumping back to that concept of abandonment, seeking validation, mm-hmm. seeking affection, right? Mm-hmm. That core belief, very well, maybe I'm not lovable. I'm not worthy. It can be more than one. It can be a slew of things. But who sits down with him and teaches him that it's okay to be femme and okay to be butch? But Ricky, who is, you know, historically kind of like, the player, the hoe, like the true hoe, he is bouncing from person to person, and he slept with more people than you could imagine. And
right.
I'm telling you, he is not taking any names. He's good. He is happy with who he is, but he's grown. And then he sits there and says to Pray Tell, who as a couple, you know, he's saying, but you can be both, you know, you can. And then here we are, he walks as Butch Queen. So he goes from father figure to very vulnerable, come judge for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
And here he is being judged, and he's wholeheartedly accepted. So, you know, it's breaking down some of those walls and some of those core beliefs that really aren't even valid. They're valid because at some point in our life, like I said, we bought into them and we agreed to them. And when you think back to, when I think of some of my core beliefs, I think back to, you know what? If I can identify where this came from, I can then work on moving past it. And some of those core beliefs, I think back to, oh my gosh, you know, I talk to my clients all the time about, you know, well, when did this first happen? When do you remember this event, this sort of life-altering, catastrophic or emotionally trying event, tumultuous event? I was maybe 4 or 5. Okay, so 4 or 5 years old, you felt this way, and it became ingrained at 4 or 5 years old. How would you handle this now at 16, 18, 25, 40, right? Very differently. So he is ultimately kind of just coming into his own, and his core beliefs are shifting. And that, I mean, if you want to talk about power in life, you know, power comes with knowledge, and part of and being knowledgeable about not just things around us and how things work and systems and things of that sort, but how our brains work and how we make decisions and how we learn our cognition, right? So he is relearning to not let those core beliefs or core belief and that little voice in your ear that says you're not good enough, right? Or you can't do this, right? And he's learning to tell it where to go. And this is no longer something I care to hear. And I'm moving forward. So there's power, and we see him becoming empowered. He might not have become empowered, maybe had he not been through what he went through in life.
Mm-hmm. I learned that he was assertive. And you know, a lot of times with people who suffer from abandonment, they tend not to assert themselves, like, because they're afraid that people will leave them and they don't want to upset the tides.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Versus people who might be, yes, yeah, so maybe he doesn't assert himself as much. Maybe he does now. Fear of being aggressive, right? Because people tend to flee when someone's too aggressive. We bounce back to Elektra. We, you know, had mixed feelings about her after season one, I think collectively, and that was probably meant to happen because she was more on the aggressive end. And aggressive people, you know, they tend to be a little more rude in your face. They don't really care about your needs, right? So Elektra is very self-satisfying. So pray tell is really, and she is a maternal figure, but she's a very different maternal figure from Blanca, a very different maternal figure from what Angel appears to become at some point based on what we're learning about her. And just a complete opposite spectrum from Pray Tell, who's our father figure.
Right.
Yeah,
totally different. But I just love that they kind of blend, even though they're completely different, they blend together. Oh,
beautifully.
To make this beautiful family.
And it really is family, you know?
Yeah. And it was natural. It's a natural occurrence. And my favorite, of course, we have to go to our mother, MJ Rodriguez, Blanca Rodriguez / Evangelista.
Yes.
That, you know, we've got to bring it home.
We better round it off with
bring it home. No, I'm just saying, we got to bring it home because, okay, so for me, I was just looking at her character and how it has evolved.
Immensely, and, right? Immensely.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes. And I just love, it's like a butterfly. Like every time I think of her, I think of butterflies.
That's beautiful. But she really is. It's a transformation in her soul, like in who she, in aligning her soul with who she needs to be. And where she needs to be. Yeah, absolutely.
And what would you say, like, her core belief, her core value is?
You know, well, I know that you and I have kind of talked a little bit about this prior to recording, and you brought up the concept of caregiver. So, right, so we know that she's a caregiver. Mm-hmm. Innately, she is a caregiver. She is a mother, start to finish, head to toe. And for those of us that are caregivers, we very often tend to forget about ourselves because we become so engulfed with taking care of other people. Now, take that to core belief. You question, well, Blanca, why are you not taking care of yourself? Right? Why have my children to take care of? Right. But if you don't take care of yourself, we saw what happened in the last episode where she ended up, it was the last episode, she was quite ill. So she didn't take care of herself. I don't remember all the specifics around it. If it was, she was not taking the medication as prescribed. I don't remember all that, but right. So is the core belief, is that I'm not worthy. I'm not important. She talked about her history of, you know, these sexual occurrences when she was seeking to be loved. I think her core belief is probably at root is I'm not lovable, because her mother chose to
not, I don't want to say not love her, but ousted her when she came out. The family did the same, the siblings. You know, she has had a very difficult time dating. We have no idea what happened to Hot Guy on the Beach from the Hamptons.
We sure don't, doctor.
Oh, let me, I thought this one, I was like, damn, look at this one. And he is going to be the one to make sure she is healthy. And then here we go. We do the little time jump and it's like, what happened to doctor? Where is doctor? I want, you know?
Doctor!
Where's doctor?
Can we bring him back?
Oh, and side note, I don't know if you saw this, but he, I believe that the gentleman who played him, the actor, is has also, I think he's starring in Hamilton on Broadway, or he's one of the roles in Hamilton on Broadway.
Oh, so, okay. I'm, see, I didn't know that.
Ready to go buy tickets for that.
Right. Bro. I was like, hey, doctor.
Hey, doctor. Oh, did you oh, sweat on me from upstage there?
We may,
listen, we may be committed after this episode.
I know. I was like, listen, my mind went so many places. Ooh. It was like, hey, talk to got a boo boo.
Oh, you got me on that one. You got me on that one. But yes, you know, so, you know. Core belief, probably very much, I'm not lovable, you know, the rejection, and I'm going, I mean, I'm thinking that's where her core belief very well could lie, and, you know, we see that, perfection. We see that changing, right, that she's learning from her chosen family that she is lovable, but she's still struggling, the relationship, that intimate one-on-one type relationship, I don't think we've seen develop yet, with a specific somebody, you know?
And then look at how I thought about her perfection as well. Remember when she was doing the, what is it? The pamphlets for the fundraiser.
Yes.
And she wanted everything to be perfect. And then that's when she revealed her struggles, her learning struggles.
Yes.
And I was right. Like, what? I never knew. How many seasons have we gone through? Right. We didn't even know.
We never knew. Oh, and that was a mess with that Frederica. That's just bringing all kinds of turmoil back. That Frederica, too much.
Ooh, that, ooh. Yo, she had me hot.
Yes, thank you. I was steaming under my collar. Like, this one, oh, and then she's in prison, and she gets to say, you know, my only regret is that I took another woman's dream. Well, thank you so much for validating that Blanca is a woman, in fact. But that's not what you said to her face. You stabbed her in the back. You know, I don't know why they felt the right. need to salvage her character unless she maybe will be coming back in the future as maybe she's an ally in training. I don't know.
No.
But she is too greedy and
fighting. She's never going to be.
No, too greedy and selfish.
She boils my blood.
Yeah.
She really, like, it was just the fact, it wasn't that her being determined or her having her, that wasn't what, I mean, it got my blood to boiling a little bit, but it was her coming to her face, acting as though she was there to support her,
yep.
and then sabotaging her.
Thank you.
That's what did.
That's it. Absolutely. Phony.
I couldn't stand
it. Just phony, acting all sweet and hunty in front of her face, and then, And that same
trying to destroy.
Yeah, she's having her store emptied out and boarded up, and she's gonna burn it down. No.
Yeah, I wanted to hurt her there.
Yes.
But we digress.
We do.
but that character.
I think this is a really this has been a really great conversation because, really, again, our core beliefs drive us constantly in life. Have you ever met somebody just, you know, I guess because I work in the psychology field, I kind of tend to assess behavior, and it's not judging. It's just, I'm kind of always wondering what people are thinking and how they're processing. What's their cognition? Yeah. What's their cognitive experience? And, you know, sometimes you'll see people who maybe they won't look you in the eye, their head's down. They don't seem to be the happiest of person or the most, what's the word I'm thinking of? I want to say self-esteem. Maybe they don't have such great self-esteem. And you can kind of get that something's there, right? So it could be a few things. Could it be you're having a bad day? Yeah. Could it be a way you were nurtured? Could it be cultural? Absolutely. But my thought is, what's their core belief? Why are they presenting like this? You know, is this a core belief thing? Because if it is, you got to find out what it is. You have to be mindful and aware to work to change it. And that's called cognitive restructuring. So that idea of let's take this foundation that we built, and we need to now break it back down and rebuild it up in a different way that helps us live to be as the best we can be and as happy as we can be.
Mm-hmm. That's, yeah. I mean, this show is so insightful, and it's like a call to action on so many different fronts.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people, we discussed previously how a lot of people connect Paris is Burning, right?
Yeah. To the show, yes. Yeah.
And with that, they have that connection. Now, I was able to do something else, and I know this is spare of the moment. And okay. I connected Mother Evangelista with Marsha P. Johnson.
Oh, okay.
I found a connection there because when she wanted to go to the bar, there was this
yes.
place, and they wouldn't yes. let her, and they threw her out and threw her cop.
Violently threw her out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There is certainly more connection that Pose draws from, like, I would say a multitude of actual people, actual events. And, you know, they just sort of take those and tell these stories in a way that's collaborative into their storyline. Absolutely. I mean, you know, that was huge. And we're still sitting in the 50th year anniversary of Stonewall. And you have, you know, people like Marsha P. Johnson who, you know, they say she threw that first brick, you know, and then she started this revolution. And we're seeing that, you know, we're still seeing that carried through. And truthfully, so if we're talking 50 years, so Pose would have been close to like 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So really, Marsha, I think at that point, let's say when Pose was filmed, I believe she still would have been alive because I think she,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure for the date that she was.
She died in 92.
92. Okay. So I'm very surprised that that hasn't come up in the show. They brought up Madonna and Vogue and how that made an impact. But I do wonder how, you know, because now Marsha P. Johnson is an iconic historical figure in all history, and whether it be Black history, LGBTQAI history, American history. She is a trans person, a person who spurred serious change and the entire movement. But we haven't seen her yet. I wonder if that'll come up. Who knows?
Yeah.
But interesting. I mean, maybe that was their homage to her.
Right.
Was Blanca being in that position.
Or was it an homage to Sylvia Riviera?
Oh, true.
Because I'm Could've not, been. You know, and then I'm not sure. And then there's that, of course, historians or historians go back and forth with the story with who threw the first brick.
Who threw. Yes, yes. Listen, as far as I'm concerned, both were there on the forefront. Both were there at a time when I feel like Marsha P. Johnson seems to get a little bit more press, but mm-hmm. I you know, it's at least I feel like as far as when you see things in the media, you see articles online. But with Sylvia, absolutely. I mean, she very well may have been, and you know, the pictures of them standing side by side and fighting together to create this movement it's no joke.
Mm-hmm.
They were there. They started what we're still working on today.
Right.
as a community and trying to pull our community together, because there is still so much. I will tell you, on our House of Evangelista page, we are constantly struggling with people trolling the page, people coming in under false pretenses that they are allies, or we like to refer to them as allies in training, people who want to know more, who want education to be there for the community based on what they've seen imposed, and, you know, the marginalization and the injustices that have happened, the racism, all of these things, the transphobia. And, you know, we see it on the page every day. And I tell you, we call it the mute and boot. And we are muting and booting people. Lately, yeah. I can't even tell you. I think yesterday it was booted 5, muted probably a dozen for 24 hours. You know, it's constantly trying to find this balance and to get people within our own community. I mean, you know, historically, people who are considered cis gay men were, that's who we saw throw Blanca out of that bar, because this is a boys' bar. This is for gay men, you know. Right. And, you know, then they flip it and they're going to tell her, well, that's a man. Well, no, it's not a man. And if you're going to say that Blanca's a man, then why wouldn't Blanca be allowed in your bar anyway? It's a men's bar. It's just, the messages are so mixed, and we just need to be one. Can't we all just get along? Can't we be one big happy family? Can't we just, please.
Get along, life is too everybody. Short.
Yes, life is too short, and this world can be too beautiful, and, you know, thank you, Katina, for this, because you're spreading the word, and it just means the world, too, I think. All of us. And I can't wait for the House of Evangelistans to hear this latest message from you.
Well, I just want to thank you for taking the time to bring your expertise. And, always. You know, it's so nice to have someone who is licensed and who works in this field and who knows this field in and out, and to share your knowledge with others, hopefully encouraging others to go forth, you know, read something, learn something more. And I feel like when people are more informed about mm-hmm. mental health issues, they're less scared, you know.
Absolutely. And remember, and what I do say, and I don't want to take too much more of your time, but mm-hmm. people will say to me all the time, oh, I've been diagnosed with this. I've been diagnosed as bipolar. I've been diagnosed as dissociative identity disorder, and they're upset. And I get excited and I say, don't be upset. Diagnosis is wonderful, because once you're diagnosed, now we come up with a plan on how to deal with it and how to challenge it and tackle it and get you to be where you need to be so you can be the best you that you can be. Because the best you that you can be might be different from the best me that I can be, but we can get you to where you need to be. And mental health, nothing to be afraid of. Our heart can get sick. Our liver can get sick. Our brain can get sick. What do? You get medical help. That's what you do.
That's encouraging.
Broken it down. That's how it goes.
He's like, yep. It's as simple as that. And you made it sound so simple, but yet encouraging, because first identify what's going on. Figure awareness. It out and work with a medical health professional. And if it calls for therapy or medication, whatever it calls for,
right,
follow it and go for it. Live your
Learn
life.
That's it. Learn how to live with it and use it to your benefit. You can say, you know, I work with a lot of adolescents and teens who are on the autism spectrum. Mm-hmm. Amazing, amazing community of people. Whether they're connected to one another or not, but it just a fascinating, the autistic brain is fascinating in that there is so much genius in it. The ability to hone in on specifics and pick up details. We are really fortunate. We have a couple of our moderators are adults who are diagnosed as autistic on House of Evangelista. And let me tell you, they are not only have my heart, because they are two of the just most genuine, lovely people, but they will pick up on details that my brain doesn't even catch on the page. and message me with, you know, should we take this off? Because this could actually be construed as X, Y, and Z instead of A, B, and C. And I go, oh my gosh, I never thought of that. So everybody has power and you know, something about you that is special in your diagnosis. If you're depressed, it may be clinical. It may be based on your chemistry. It may be based on the reward pathways in your brain, not producing or receiving certain chemicals, right? So mm-hmm. What do? We need to get medication in there to fill those receptors and get you feeling good.
Right.
And there we go.
Boom.
So let's do this. Let's get the LGBTQAI community together. Let's get people with mental health issues together. A lot of times we're one and the same. We have a lot of mental health issues in the community. And when I say the community, I also include our allies and allies in training. We have all got stuff going on, and we're all able to change and grow.
Right. And with love.
With love. Just like Mother Blanca. And that doctor who disappeared. Damn.
I know. I'm still like, now I gotta do some research on my doctor.
I'm about to Google image him.
Zloxa. What Zloxa. Kind of insurance do you take?
Woo. You are. I love you. You are so much fun. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
What you're doing is phenomenal, and I support you 100%. Thank you, Katina.
Well, thank you, Johnny, for being on here. And you know, anything that I can do, please let me know, because I'm here. Like,
thank you.
I feel like an extended family member. Like, hey, Regen.
Hey, hey. Absolutely, and the same goes for you. Anything you need, we're here.
Oh. Well, all right. Today that ends our little parent fest, I like to call it, with Pose.
So, doctor.
Let's not forget our doctor. Yes. I'm going to find our doctor. I might do an Let's episode do on him.
you better drop in his DM box. Go say hi.
Hey, yeah, I'll drop in somebody's DM box. You know, rejection is nothing for me. So
we've all been there. We have all, same. We've all been there, girl.
You don't know. Listen, you can't eat with a closed mouth, okay?
Wise words to live by.
But I hope that you have a great day, and people will be able to catch this message shortly. So thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All righty. Bye.
All right. Love you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.